This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and I recently decided to give Sterling Soap Company's Ground Breakfast Blend coffee a try. While brewing, the aroma was inviting, and the taste? Lightly sweet and delicious, as the texture of this amazing coffee was sweet and smooth, as I experienced a coffee with a velvety texture, almost creamy. Sterling's breakfast blend is light but in no way weak, with a high quality taste and smell. My wife and I are now hooked on Sterling Soap coffee, and you should be too. Check out their coffees and other products at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
We have talked a lot about the NFL draft and the worst draft busts ever recently here on Pigskin Dispatch, but Timothy P. Brown may have come up with perhaps the worst drafting by any team ever, and it happened a couple years in a row. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal of positive football history, and welcome to another edition where we talk with Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Darren. Looking forward to chatting today. This is a story about number one draft picks being a load of number two.
Ooh, a load of number two. Oh, that's a lot of manure.
Yeah. Yeah, it was well above head high.
All right. Well, we are sort of segueing into an article that you wrote that you titled "The Two Dumbest NFL Draft Picks Ever." So This is, you know, we're just freshly out of the draft season, and you're getting into training camps and getting ready for football season. What can you tell us about these two dumbest draft picks?
Well, there have been bad draft picks in the past. I mean, there have been draft picks where, you know, either people just had outsized expectations of a player or just never developed. I know, you know, as a Packer fan growing up, so the whole Tony Mandrich pick was always, you know, been considered one of their worst. But even then, you know, he was a tremendous college football player, you know, and I'm not going to speculate on why he never worked out and, you know, for the Packers, but there have been other draft picks that have just been dumb because of incompetence, not caring, whatever. And so I will just say that the two dumbest draft picks, in my opinion, were both by the same franchise, and they were 1 year after another, which is amazing. So they're the 1946 and 1947 draft picks by the Redskins. George Preston Marshall was the owner, and he is not a guy who's well thought of from a history standpoint, but one thing was pretty sure is that he was pretty cheap. And so at a time when teams were spending some money on drafting, scouting, you know, they'd kind of look into their players. He was still operating under the, hey, I got a buddy that, you know, an old fraternity brother who lives in San Francisco, and he says this kid is good, you know, or just like picking up magazines, leafing through them and, you know, figuring out who you're going to draft from them. And then obviously the All-Star games, you know, were a big deal back then for evaluating. But one way or another, they just obviously didn't spend much money on their drafting process. So now we're going to segue into a player, a college football player named Cal Rossi. And so in 1943, during World War II, he spent his freshman year at USC in a V-12, so Navy, you know, training program, but he didn't play football. So then in 44, he transfers to UCLA, and he's a freshman starter at halfback. Now, you know, rosters were depleted then, but, you know, college rosters, but still, you know, he was a, you know, really top-notch, you know, running back coming out of Santa Barbara High School. And then in 45, he leads a team in rushing. He's all Pacific Coast Conference, the predecessor of the Pac-12. So, you know, I mean, definitely a highly regarded football player. And so the Redskins draft him. They take him in the 1946 draft. They take him in the first round. And the problem was that he was ineligible for the draft. So they couldn't even, you know, it was like they picked him and the draft, the NFL said, sorry, no, you can't, you know, you forfeited your draft pick. So, I mean, he just completed his sophomore year. And, you know, there were some goofy things back then. Sometimes teams could pick future picks. They formalized that later. But when you did a future pick, the guy should have been a junior, you know, so that was kind of the established practice. So anyways, so then in 40, the season of 46, he's, you know, second team all PCC. And he's on the road. UCLA goes to the Rose Bowl. So, you know, good player on a good squad. So 1947 draft comes around, and the Redskins pick Cal Rossi again. So they draft the same guy 2 years in a row in the first round. And that time he would have qualified as a future pick. But he had been telling people all along, I don't want to play pro football. You know, this is not something I'm interested in. He wanted to get into coaching. So, you know, so after the 47 season, he doesn't report, or after the 47 draft, he doesn't report. He plays the 47 season, his senior season, you know, as a Bruin. He ends up playing in the East-West Shrine game. So again, good player. He leaves UCLA at the time as their all-time per carry average. But he never reports to the Redskins, never reports to any AAFC team or anything. He goes right into coaching high school football and does that for about 6-7 years. And then he eventually moves in more to – he works for, like, Cal Teachers, which is, I believe, like the state union for, you know, for high school, and maybe, you know, grade school teachers too. So, you know, heck of a player. Certainly draft worthy if you draft him when he's eligible. Or when he, if he wanted to play, but he'd been telling everybody he didn't want to play. So it's just to draft the same guy 2 years in a row with your first round pick and never sign him is just the epitome of dumb.
Yeah, it sure is. I don't think Marshall was reading a tea leaves very well with him, was he?
No. I mean, that's just such a basic mistakes. You just can't even believe anybody could do that. But it still does tell you that some of these leagues were pretty, I mean, even the NFL was a little bit of a, you know, it wasn't the sophisticated organization that we know it to be today.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it wasn't super uncommon. Like, I mean, if that happened today, we would all be, you know, flabbergasted. But, you know, like the very first draft pick, Jay Berwanger, first Heisman Trophy winner, the Eagles draft him. And he says, hey, I can make more money, you know, selling whatever he was, some commodity he was selling in Chicago. She said, I don't want to play football. We never played football. So yeah. The Eagles lost their first draft pick to that. And, you know, I guess more modern times, wasn't it? John Elway said that he did not, I think it was the Colts. He said, I will not play for the Colts. Don't draft me. And they drafted him anyway and end up having to trade him a couple of days later, trade his rights to the Broncos. So I guess it still happens to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point where, okay. So like Berwanger, you know, he really could make more money, you know, outside of football. You know, and then even like, you know, when you had the AAFC going on, you know, there's a little bit of competition. And even in like the, I just was reading something interesting last night or this morning about the difference in pay between the CFL and the NFL, because it used to be a lot closer. Mm-hmm. And so the CFL, even in the 50s, was still signing like number one draft choices and getting guys to sign with them. I mean, there were, you know, Heisman Trophy winners signed with them instead of with the NFL. But then, you know, the pay discrepancy has become so large now, you know, that, you know, maybe there's a couple of quarterbacks in the CFL who make more than the NFL minimum, but not many, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And it's mostly just television revenue, I think. So, yeah, but nevertheless, don't draft a guy who doesn't want to play football. Yeah. Call me crazy.
Right. Yeah, just ask. I think another one, Eli Manning, the Chargers didn't end up drafting. They traded their pick to the Giants late, but they were talking about it. You know, that's, so it still happens, I guess. And I guess I was just reading something recently with Archie Manning, Eli's father. I kept telling him, he said, you know, don't do that. You know, don't tell him you're not going to play for him. And I guess it was a misunderstanding. Eli said something out of context that they believed and they traded him. So Eli Manning could have played for the Chargers, I guess is what the stories are saying now. And they would have been okay with that. But
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so interesting stuff. So, you know, this is another one of those times where you go back and you research, you know, some stories that maybe we've forgotten about through time, and you know, some other more interesting things pop up, you know, more shiny objects in the NFL and college football. But then you go back and you research it and bring it to light again in your tidbits. And maybe you could tell us how we can get into to enjoy some of your tidbits.
Sure. Just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, and you know, there's, with very few exceptions, it's all, you know, free, but of course you can get a paid subscription, and I certainly appreciate that. But you can subscribe for free or paid, and once you subscribe, you get an email every time that I add a new article, and you know, the email contains the full article. But you know, you can also go out there anytime you want. You know, I've got something like 1400 articles on there now, so yeah, if you're just looking for some football history, type in a couple of keywords and you'll probably find something along those lines. So,
all right. Well, Tim, we sure appreciate all the hard work that you do and the research and, you know, bringing us the facts of these great eras of football that we've forgotten about. And we'd love to talk to you again next Tuesday about a new story.
Let's make it happen.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.